Do you ever stop and wonder who's actually tugging the threads behind the news you read, the post you pass along, the takes you swear by?
What if, in a war, the sharpest weapon isn't a bomb, it's a story?
Lately, yeah. I'll see something that fits my fears a little too neatly, and I feel that itch to hit share. Then a voice in my head goes, who wanted this in front of me, and why now?
Same place I land. My whole career has been about how narratives work, how they invite empathy, mint heroes, cast villains. But the same craft that builds meaning can also bend reality.
That part keeps me up.
Because it's not theoretical anymore. It's on our phones all day. We're not just spectators. We're in the mix, whether we signed up or not.
Exactly. And that's what I want to dig into with you, psychological operations, psyops, and why they sit at the center of modern information conflict.
Then let's walk it from the beginning. Leaflets tumbling from planes to AI-run campaigns shaping whole conflicts.
The aim isn't just battlefield wins. It's seeding distrust, steering opinion, and, in the end, bending how people see the world to fit a strategy.
So the core problem for us becomes, how do we tell what's true from what's engineered to feel true? And how do we build any kind of immunity?
To even try, we've got to read the playbook. The tech keeps changing. The basic move is ancient.
People have been lying to win wars for a very long time.
Think about Genghis Khan. We remember the brutality, but terrorist theater was the real edge. He was running head games before anyone named the field.
How did that actually show up back then?
Stagecraft. Soldiers lighting 3 torches each so a force looks triple its size. Things tied to horses' tails to billow dust and sell the idea of a vast army.
So the goal was to win the headspace fight before the first arrow flew.
Right. Emissaries arrived with a binary offer. Surrender now or be erased. If a town resisted, he carried it out, then let a handful live to spread the tale. The legend marched faster than the men.
That's horrifying and efficient. You don't just beat the next town, you make them crumble in advance.
Back then, though, the rumor mill moved at the pace of a horse. The industrial turn happens in World War I.
Because mass media shows up?
Because print at scale meets mass literacy. Suddenly you could drop your narrative into millions of minds at once, yours or the enemy's.
Hence the iconic posters, I want you, monsters out of the other side, all of it.
And much subtler moves. The Bryce Report in 1915, for example, a British commission laying out gruesome accounts of German atrocities against Belgian civilians.
I've read pieces of that. The stories are searing.
They are, and they hit hard. They cast Germans as inhuman Huns, a moral emergency that demanded action, especially in places like the United States.
Historians still argue over the precision of every claim.
But from a psyops angle, precision almost wasn't the point.
Exactly. It created an emotional reality that powered policy. That's the birth of state-scale narrative warfare as we know it.
And that template, a clean, charged story that justifies the fight and paints the foe as irredeemable, it keeps showing up. Only the delivery system keeps upgrading. Press, then radio, now virality.
The delivery upgrade is the shift. World War I proved the model. World War II turned it into a full system, not just one potent story anymore.
So what did it become if it wasn't just a single tale?
A constructed world for the adversary to inhabit. Large-scale deception. Think Dudley Clark's work. He helped write that modern manual. Not just leaflets, but fake armies, spoofed radio, double agents, a whole counterfeit reality.
Hold on, fake armies as in not a few decoy tanks, but entire units that never existed?
An entire army group. Operation Bodyguard, the umbrella plan to mislead the Germans about Normandy, built the first U.S. Army Group, FUSAG, on paper. They gave it a star commander, George Patton, stitched insignia, ran radio chatter, and parked inflatable armor and dummy landing craft in Kent to sell an invasion at Pas de Calais.
The nerve of that is not a lie you tell, it's a performance you inhabit with the other side's spies as the target audience.
That's the point. You don't just hide your hand, you write their script. The British double-cross system had flipped nearly all German agents in Britain.
So the trusted sources feeding Berlin
were echoing Allied fiction. Reports flowed back confirming Patton's phantom force, confirming Calais as the real threat. A rumor on the radio is easy to doubt. A report from your best asset? That lands.
That's the psychological judo. You don't fight their priors, you recruit them. Once the phantom force is in their heads, real intel about Normandy just reads as misdirection.
Bias does the rest. It worked so thoroughly that after D-Day, Hitler held elite panzer divisions near Calais for almost 7 weeks, waiting for a real landing that never came. While Normandy hung in the balance, a huge chunk of the German army watched inflatable tanks trapped by a narrative.
We honor the courage on the beaches, and we should, but this silent game, the perception war, might have made the landing survivable.
It did. It blunted the response and saved lives, and it set a new precedent. The aim wasn't just to shake a soldier in a trench, it was to take over the High Command's map of reality.
And once you can do that to generals, pointing the same techniques amplified by new tech at civilians isn't a leap, it's the next step.
That's where we live now. The target isn't a bunker in Berlin. It's your neighbor. It's your uncle on Facebook. It's you, doom-scrolling in bed.
And the goal isn't a captured city. It's captured trust in institutions, in media, in each other, in the basic floorboards of reality.
Because if we can't agree on the baseline, we can't act. A society stuck in mutual suspicion just idles, like those Pienzer units staring at blow-up armor while the real threats move.
So the most effective attack is teaching a country to unravel itself.
It's the cheapest form of warfare we've ever built. No bombs required. You fracture the shared story.
Every citizen becomes a possible carrier of the next meme in the original, not the internet, sense of the word.
Which circles us back. We started with resilience. After walking from Genghis Khan's campfires to AI bot farms, I'll be honest, I feel less armored than I hoped. The scale is a lot.
It's designed to feel like too much. Still, I come back to narrative skills, becoming sharper readers of the world.
What does that look like, concretely?
Use your feelings as tripwires. When a headline spikes your anger or flatters your side a little too perfectly, pause.
Ask, who benefits from me feeling this right now? Treat your own reaction as a clue that a narrative device might be working. Build what I'd call story literacy, like spotting a cheap twist in a movie. Catch the manipulative beats in your feed.
I like that. I do, but I'm uneasy. We're asking individuals to learn close reading while state-scale actors use tools most of us don't even understand. It's like training cashiers to spot funny bills while the other side prints flawless fakes. Can personal literacy really stand up to a fire hose?
That fear is warranted. And maybe literacy alone won't do it, but it's the floor, not the ceiling. The alternative is to outsource reality. And even the slickest lie usually tells on itself. It's too simple, too flattering, too loud. Under pressure, it frays.
So you're landing on cautious optimism via critical scrutiny.
Yeah. The storyteller's toolkit, motive, character, plot doubles as a debunker's kit.
I'm with you on the toolkit, and I'm also thinking we're behind on the systemic side. The speed and reach of today's info war outstrip how fast we adapt.
Yeah.
We need individual skills and an immune system we haven't built yet in communities, schools, policy.
No argument there. Two fronts, the inner one, our own minds, and the outer one, the digital commons we share. We just walked a long road. Mongolian steppe tactics, phantom armies, and the memeified present.
Which makes the oldest conflict pretty clear, the fight for the mind. Thanks for pushing through this with me and for making me think harder than I plan to today.